Welcome to Earth Reflections, a podcast by the Network of African Women Environmentalists, NAWE. Your hosts are Michael Onyango and Dr. Sheila Uchibuju.
For this particular series of our podcast, it's our second podcast, and I'm going to ask everybody around the table to introduce themselves. I am Michael Onyango. I am the co-host, and I'll ask my co-host to also introduce herself, and then we will let our guests tell us who they are and what they do.
Hi, I'm Sheila Uchibuju, and I'm so excited to have these wonderful people around to talk more about what we're doing in NAWE and what we intend to do in the future.
And today's, what are we speaking about? Landscape Guardians, isn't it?
Okay. No, today we're going to speak more about our campaign for Adopt a Landscape. And so we have our Landscape Guardian, we have our mentors who are supporting the Landscape Guardian in his work now and in the future.
Oh, okay, fine. So I think let us start off with Alan first. Alan, can you tell us your names, what you do, and why you're here today?
I'm Alan Otaro. I am the founder and executive director of the Catholic Youth Network for Environmental Sustainability in Africa, CENESA for short. It's a very long name. So, which is a platform that brings together young Catholics from across Africa to respond to the environmental crisis and, of course, also climate change. And I'm here today also as a landscape guardian for this as part of NAWE, which we are working together with.
Okay. Well, Sandra, welcome today.
Thank you.
Yeah, so why do we have you with us on this table? Tell us.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm really, really excited. So I just recently, in fact, this week, became the director of the Rome Center for Sustainable Development.
Congratulations. Good
thank
stuff.
Thank you. Good, yeah. With the United Nations Development Program. To be based in Rome, not in the very far future. And I'm also one of the founding members of NAWE and very excited that we're having a conversation with one of the landscape guardians and, you know, individuals that are really engaged in issues of earth, environment, sustainability. And so looking forward to the conversation.
Okay. So Isaac, we only have about 30 minutes for this podcast. So it's going to be very difficult to try and contain you. But introduce yourself and tell us who you are and what you do.
You can imagine even before that how excited I am with a young gentleman doing such a good work and founded a great organization and good people like they are here. My name is Isaac Kalua Green and I'm excited to be here. And I can't hide it, how excited I am with a young man in what he's doing. I've just been introduced to your Opus Dei movement, and I'm looking forward to be a supporter of such an institution, and I believe that the youth are also benefiting out of that. So congratulations. I'm glad to have such great people here.
Yeah. I just wanted to say, I think Sandra's being a little bit modest about...
really? Okay.
You know, because she NAWE is her baby. She held the vision for many years and brought together the constituency that was the founding group that became NAWE and actually introduced us, you know, when we said, it would be nice to work with young people. She said, oh, I know this guy, Alan Otaro, is doing this wonderful work. And at that time, she had been talking to the Vatican about the work that their interest and this Pope's particular interest in having a healthy planet. And so she really is a person who is a super connector, one of those people that things coalesce.
Okay. So we'll start this back to you first before we go to our other guests that we have here. So what is NAWE and why did you, I mean, what pushed you to forming NAWE? I mean, what was the driving factor or what was it that really compelled you to do this? Yes.
You know what? I mean, that would be a conversation for a whole day. But in a nutshell, what I can say is I was actually a little exhausted to see that, you know, statistically names of women or the role of women and youth in terms of environmental issues or just generally in sustainability, we're kind of like very casually thrown on the table in textbooks, in notes, in multilateral processes. And yet there wasn't that anchoring way of saying, oh, it's Dr. Shila Ochubuju who has discovered so, or working with this community, or, you know, Alan is the founder of X. And so I felt that it was important to have this network that brought together, but also was a network of networks, really, to really begin. Can we have the names to the faces? Can we also see where there's some hope, where the young people, women, really changing the dynamic on the African continent? And I think for me, it also came at a time when every time I looked at the news, every time I watched something, it was so grim. Everything about Africa was a woman and a child dying in the Mediterranean, mm-hmm. or a young man or something. So what was there that was left for us to talk about? And so, and then I just had a really wonderful group of friends who are also colleagues who said, look, let's just do this. And off we went.
Wow, okay. So Alan, you know, tell us a little bit about how you met Masonda, but beyond that, also tell us why you do what you do and exactly where you are in terms of what you're doing. I know that you're in a number of countries and how that came about into being.
Wow, so I'm already trying to remember exactly where we first met. You know, we've had, you know, many, many encounters since we met. I think the last time we met was at, it was in Madrid at COP25, the UN climate summit. But before that, we'd also met in 2019, I mean, when we had the Laudato Si conference at the UN Environment campus here in Nairobi, which was a conference bringing together young people mostly, to talk about, you know, the experience of environment, taking care of the environment from a faith perspective, and from many different religions, with Christians, with Muslims, with Hindus, and so on, and to share that experience from a kind of an African perspective, talking about biodiversity, climate, and the dialogue between, you know, faith, science, policy, but the concrete experiences of young people and communities from, you know, from the grassroots. That was very, very important. And that was, for me, you know, really one of the major highlights of our working together with Masonda, because one of the key themes of that meeting was to talk about biodiversity and, you know, ecosystems and how, what we can do to really conserve them. So about Sinesa, it was founded in 2012. So with some of my colleagues, we were wondering, why isn't there a platform specifically of African youth within the church who are working towards bringing...
So which church is this?
Catholic Church.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. The Catholic Church.
Okay.
About, you know, what? How can we implement the Catholic Church teaching, especially Catholic social teaching, in response to environmental issues? And so we came together and said, well, if that platform doesn't exist, let's create it. And so we created it and legally incorporated in 2014. And at the beginning, though, about with colleagues from about 6 countries at the time. Now we've grown to 9, and we're still growing. And these countries are Kenya, Tanzania, Zambia, Zimbabwe, South Africa. We also have Rwanda. And now in recent years, last year and the year before, we are setting up Cameroon, Ghana, and Nigeria. And the idea is to have wherever the African youth, you know, Catholic African youth on the continent, we want them to be involved and to be part of this initiative of responding really to the call of their own faith as Catholics, that it's an integral part, it's a core part of their Christian experience to be involved in protecting the environment wherever they are. Mm. Yeah.
Isaac, coming to you, you know, you've been around for quite a while in terms of what you're doing, in terms of green, you know, the green economy, the whole green agenda and everything else. Is it really important?
Quite important, and I believe that is why my name has changed to Green, because all that I am about is green.
I didn't realize that.
Yes, I am. And the reason for this, just green has 3 meanings, and it is for this reason also that in the year 2000 I founded the Green Africa Foundation. The first meaning is about kindness. Mm-hmm. The second meaning is about sustainable livelihoods. And the third meaning is about passionate environmental conservation. Just because of lack of kindness amongst ourselves to the environment and to each other, with the lack of replenishment of what goes around and what happens around, we have failed to connect with the youth like Alan here and just get an opportunity. I enjoy mentorship. I enjoy working with the young people because they need to be held their hand. We have been held our hands, but for some reason there's an age bracket that we have forgotten to hold our younger people and guide them in the best way direction. I have made a myriad of mistakes. I have chosen never to repeat any. But they are at a time that we cannot afford to leave them or let them make any mistake. And therefore, the spirit of replenishment is what is missing. And the moment we understand that replenishment is important in our lives and the environment, then it will start taking us to the next level in terms of relationships. Because even talking about the issue of corruption that has hit Africa in such a heavy way is because it's deeply entrenched in us. We are dealing with one direction, but it's so deeply entrenched in the youth and our own DNA so that we do not even feel it when we are doing it. But at what point can we draw a line? And can we even have a curriculum on kindness that we can be able to apply? Before now getting to the issue of youth, and you ask why important this subject is.
But youth, as
I allow you to do this, youth are looking for jobs. Look, look at Kenya, for instance, 75%, 35 years old and younger. These are people who are yearning for jobs. These are people looking up to gain sustainable livelihoods. But what opportunities are we offering them to do this? And far beyond that. So thinking about creating job opportunities for them and helping them to achieve what they want to do. And for Alan, you know, he will think just because of the Catholic community, but I want to challenge you. It's about the church. It's about the Christian. When you talk about 80% of Kenya and most our countries in Africa being, or 90% being Christians, you need to add up. And don't just confine yourself within the Catholic. Get your contemporaries in other churches so that you're moving a larger institution that can be able to influence the youth that we have.
No, I really like your point on the first green, you know, the element of kindness, because for me, I come from a dual ancestry, being Zambian, but also being South African. And in Xhosa, we have the word Ubuntu, which really is I am because we are. And I think it's this philosophy that was so deep and has been deep-rooted in a lot of African community and somehow, somewhere, became fractured. And with that fracturing resulted in what we've seen as the high levels of degradation, really.
And when I was talking to you earlier, you made an important point about kindness. So kindness, being kind to ourselves and being kind to the environment. And you brought an anecdote about how many of us who went to rural school, went to schools in Africa, especially rural schools, where your punishment was to work on the land. That was it. You failed, you cut grass, dig this. And so that immediately changed our relationship with the land in a way that is negative. And if you start at that young age, it follows you all through. And so it's important for us to revisit how we relate to the land and where some of our embedded notions about the land come from.
You're right. And you know, unknown to many people out there, there are people who hate trees with a passion. Just because when they were growing up, the teacher felt that they should be punished and maybe it was wrong punishment, and they were forced to plant a tree, they were forced to dig the hole, they were, and they hate the tree as it grows because it reminds them of a painful session. And these are the people you're dealing with today. They don't understand why you're doing some of these things when they went through this. So we must connect with people from that point of view, especially the young people, for them to understand why it is important to keep it, you know, to think and act green.
Alan, you know, and just on the back of what they're all saying and your own personal story, so tell us a little bit about your childhood and what has led you and why you're so passionate about what you do within the organization that you have founded.
So I grew up in Njoro, and from our house, looking on the horizon, those days growing up as a little boy, I could see kind of the canopy of the Mau forest. As well, on the roads, we had all these trucks going up and down the road into the forest, bringing back, you know, logs to the timber yards in town. Progressively over time, I noticed that those, you know, timbers eventually closed because there wasn't any sustainability in the logging. They were just cutting down trees and nobody was really, you know, working on a plan to replenish. So the situation we have now is that all those timbers are practically closed because there's no supply of logs anymore. And now there is, you know, the effect of the deforestation that has occurred. We have serious issues with water. In, you know, at least in my home in Joro, and we even had to set up a rainwater harvesting in our house. But then the effect is that when there's because of the deforestation as well, then the rain patterns have changed. So even if you have a tank, you know, the longest it could last would maybe 2 months, and then if it doesn't rain in 2 months, then you are in trouble because then you have to find you know, an alternative. So that, you know, was for me a very personal experience. I remember going, you know, to the local Catholic church, which had like a borehole to supply the community with water. So like a water point, and you had to, with a wheelbarrow with four jerry cans of 20 liter each, you know, going about 2 kilometers to fill them up and coming back home. So that was like a weekend experience for me as a young boy growing up. And of course, much, much later is when I understood and was able to make the connection of what I was seeing with the deforestation, with the logging, with what's happening now with the drying up of water, but also just generally the supply of vegetables. I remember, you know, going to my grandmother's place in Molo, which is also, you know, in the Mau Forest area. There were like really these huge cabbages and all that. And the place was also really, really cold. And these days, well, you know, you could walk around with a t-shirt because it's quite warm now.
Climate change.
Yeah. It's interesting. Isaac, you were chairman of the Kenya Water Towers Authority. And I mean, water towers, are they really important? I mean, why would Kenya have an authority around water towers? And I want to link this with exactly what Alan has just said.
Thank you. Yes, indeed, I was the founder chair of, I still am the founder chair of Kenya Water Towers Agency. Yes. And I would like to link it up with what Alan is talking about. And there's nothing, absolutely nothing wrong in logging. Nothing. The only thing is that you have to do logging of what you have replenished. This is the difference. Because there are countries out there whose livelihoods, whose economies on matters of logging and timber production and all that. But are we there as Kenya? No. Are we there as African countries? No. We talk about the Constitution talking about 10%. I have been preaching, and I continue to preach, that the bare minimum that we should have as a country is 40%. It is possible. It is doable. We have land. And not only that, there must be also the respect of landscapes, because, I mean, you will find the savanna elephants, and you will find the forest elephants in Congo and all these places. So we must respect all the landscapes as they are, because they are naturally done as such. What we need to do, and out of my experience in this, is that we are logging much more than what we are replenishing. And the art of replenishment is just the antithesis of depleting what we have. So we must be able to do that. And this can only be sorted out by having right policies driven by the youth, to create the much more needed employment opportunities that are there. As you know, in Kenya, we have stopped logging of trees for a certain period of time, and it was stopped during my time. But can you imagine, we are importing other trees and wood that is been cut in Tanzania, Uganda, as if we are not doing just a mess to our own selves, because what happens out there affects us. And therefore we need water, we need food to be produced. We must be able to create policies that will be able to replenish, sustain what is already there, dealing with the sustainable livelihoods that we must deal with, because people have challenges and the solutions must be found there. And we must first of all connect with where they are. Fencing all this forest is very important. I mean, water is going to be scarce, a rare commodity very soon, unless we work on these activities. And getting the people surrounding those places so that they are part of of protecting the available resource that we have out there, the natural capital equals to the growth of a country economically. And therefore, you're right. And we must be able to replenish as we move on that and focus on it as a major source of economic growth of a country. Mm-hmm.
Sheila, you always talk about ecosystems. I mean, that's one word that you always use and you always use. So I want you to, you know, so why is it important that women need to be at the center of this conversation?
Yeah.
Why is it important that he's spoken about sustainability? So how do we, you know, put all these, you know, within the framework of the things that we're talking about?
Yeah. I mean, I was interesting listening when we're talking about deforestation. One of our groups of members, I was talking to them, and they had he had worked a lot on creating alternative energy sources, biogases, and so he was biogas digesters. So he was saying when they interviewed the women in the community that usually their major source of fuel was from the trees, and so. When now they had the biogas digester and they had other ways of getting clean fuel, they reducing deforestation was one thing. But for the women, what they said was, what we love is getting our dignity back. Like our hands are not always dirty. Our children are not always being choked by the smoke of this wood.
So what is clean fuel? I think also just a bit demystify that for people who may not understand.
And so also alternative. Sure. Rather than just getting making charcoal from cutting the wood,
yeah.
So we have other kinds of energy sources that we can use that are not coming from the wood.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a myriad of them that are being used, and clean energy stoves that people, different organizations are bringing into communities. But the point that I wanted to make is it's important for women. So we look when we talk about conserving trees. Yes, we want to conserve trees, but people still need fuel. They still need it energizes everything.
Mm.
So unless we create alternatives, we don't de-incentivize them cutting. But women are at the center of this because it is the women that go get the fuel wood. It is the women that cook and are therefore choked with respiratory diseases. It is the children they're carrying on their back when they're cooking that end up with asthma and all these other things. So women are at the center of this problem as it is now. And so it's not just planting trees so that we have nice, clean environments or because we're nice people. It actually affects the health of our community, the physical health of our women, and their dignity, that they're not always slaving over charcoal stoves. So that's one way, that's one story that helped me to think in that way. But ecosystems, we try to really focus more on landscapes, because when you say ecosystems, it seems like a scientific word, and it's very quite hard to unpack.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we are very much in this campaign looking at landscape guardians, landscape mentors, and very much talking about a passionate connection to a landscape, like Alan with the Mao, and you can understand where that passion comes from, and you can connect with him on that.
So right on that point. So how does somebody become a landscape mentor or landscape guardian the way Alan is? Because I think the other thing is we want more people.
Absolutely.
Okay. To onboard more people. Ready to respond to that. I think women make us.
Yeah.
And a country that invests in making women understand why they got to do what they have to do for their own good is a country that is headed to greatness. A country that does not respect women is definitely headed for doom. And therefore, the youth at this level, where we know we are doing about 60-40 or 50-50% or 51% men to women, they need to be able to put more effort. Because when women understand something, believe you me, Michael, this country will go to greatness. If we are talking about environmental conservation, passionate.
Yeah. Yes.
If you make the women understand this, if you make them be able to make money and place food on the table and in terms of saving their time, in terms of being able to connect with what they must be able to connect to, I'm telling you, Africa would go places. And that is what we are lacking. We tend to press down the women leaders, our girls, our women. We just, you know, it's like it's been left for them to fight it on for themselves. Yet they're carrying so much and they have a lot to do. A woman would do twice what we can be able to do, given equal opportunities and given what to understand why they have to do it. So I agree with her very well, Doc, that we must be able to support our women. And the thing is to understand why we have to make them do what they're doing.
Okay. Yeah, so Sheila, so back to you. So how does one become a landscape?
We're really encouraging anybody who has an expertise or just a knowledge of the land and feels that they are able to do have the generosity of spirit, as Dr. Kalua said, to hold the hand of a young person who is passionate about conservation or restoration issues, but perhaps doesn't know where to start or what to do. So our job as NAWE will be to facilitate those connections. And if you go on our website, you'll see the Dr. Landscape. So if you adopt a landscape and you say there that you want to be a landscape mentor, we can connect you with a young person who is working on that landscape. The landscape guardians, at the moment, we only have five, and we very intentionally started off with five because we wanted to choose those that had a sphere of influence that we could amplify. Mm-hmm. So, and you know, because when we think about young environmentalists, you always think of Greta Thunberg. So we're like, okay, let's create hundreds of Greta Thunbergs for Africa, the African equivalent, because there are many young people in Africa who are working in communities that live and die by the land. So it's a very immediate need and a passion to them. It's not theoretical. They need to conserve their landscape. So we will at different points ask partner agencies to nominate young people who they think should be guardians. It's because it's an honor. You become an ambassador, and it's quite a big job to carry. And at some point later on in the year, we will unfold our next group of landscape guardians.
Okay. Yes. Well, your time really flies. So I'm going to go around the table and just ask everybody to close off with a few words or a few comments, whatever it is that you feel passionate about. And I think we'll start off with Sonda.
Sure. No, thank you so much for this, Michael and Sheila. I mean, for me, I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful because I know that young people are really onto something. I've met a lot of young... When I met with Alan in Madrid at the Climate COP, you could see the passion of a lot of young African youths and drive, and also the African women, indigenous peoples, non-state actors, royals, etc. It's just been amazing. And now we have entered 2021, the decade of action. This is the decade that will be the turning point for this planet, because by 2030, we should be able to say whether we've done something or not with the Sustainable Development Goals. So I'm really hopeful what I'm seeing from young people, and all we can do is, you know, Doc has said, is to really make sure we handhold them, we guide them, we support them, we facilitate spaces, and really we make sure that their leadership is also recognized.
And we find resources to support them as they're working with their communities to realize their restoration vision. I actually wanted you to say something about the work that you're doing with the Vatican, because I think not many people will understand actually how properly committed they are to this decade of ecosystems restoration.
Absolutely. So when I was working for UNEP, we met with the Vatican because we had worked together with FAO and obviously through the UN General Assembly. There's a decade starting this year, actually 2021, which is the UN Decade on Ecosystem Restoration. And this decade really is one that is kind of rides on the messaging of the Pope of this, our common home, which is Earth. And so when we met with, counterparts from the Vatican, I mean, there's the passion and also just the drive to make sure that this decade is anchored within the Laudato Si. And also this is where we see the leadership and faith leadership. And one of the programs I was also responsible for was called the Interfaith Rainforest Initiative, where basically, the church, the Catholic Church and other, faith leaders have come together to make sure that the conversation is happening around restoration. And faith, really, it's not even just from sort of, Buddhism or is it Christianity? Even indigenous faiths, in the Amazon, we have had indigenous faiths. Even here in Africa, Absolutely. We have indigenous faiths. Or everyone coming to their table within their spiritual connection, because we have a spiritual connection to this planet. And very much, it's That's why she's referred to as mother. Mm-hmm. You know, she is our mother. And so the Vatican has been incredibly instrumental, and I'm so glad that, you know, Alan is able to tell us about the work that Sinessa is doing.
Thank you very much. Sheila?
I don't have much more to say. I just want to share a quote that I came across yesterday, and I loved it because it's from Wangari Maathai. One of the outputs from the Nawe Network will be a book. We're going to do the first coffee table book, which will tell the story of Wangari Maathai and how she contributed to the revival of Karura Forest. So it's called Roots of Resilience, Wangari Maathai and the Revival of Karura Forest. So that will come out sometime this year. So as I was doing the research yesterday, I came across a beautiful quote which said, where she said, "We are called to assist the earth to heal her wounds, and in the process, heal our own." And I love that so much, especially now in this, as we hopefully get into a post-COVID world, there's a lot of healing that has to be done inside us and on the planet.
Isaac, over to you.
In the year of action, yes. In the decade of action, as Ian mentioned,
yes.
I believe that nothing is so potent as the silent influence of a good example. Mm-hmm. When we talk about age and mentoring others, it's so relative. And therefore, you find that everyone has got a role to take and a hand to hold, because it's what we do every single day that matters and adds up to the value that we expect our country to be, our continent to be. And it is our own individual contribution, be it in the social media, like I will be very active just to let out this so that whoever is following me will be able to see what it is. Is it by sitting down with Alan in such a program and just discuss what my experience is? Is it by just doing, because we are being watched every single day by other people. What will they take home? Mm-hmm. And on my side, I just want people to remember about kindness, sustainable livelihoods, and the passionate environmental conservation. I would like to be counted on that and having filled the space in the most practical way as possible.
Alan, over to you.
One of the African proverbs I really like is the proverb that says that what the elders can see while sitting, the young cannot even see from the top of a tree. And so for me, it's really an honor to be sitting with Dr. Green here.
Yes,
and to just, you know, learn from his wisdom and experience. And I look really forward to build on that, to really move forward the work that we've already been doing with Sinessa, but also with others, as you threw down the challenge to us, you know, to collaborate with others, as also as Pope Francis invites all of us to do in Laudato Si. And the interesting thing about that letter is that traditionally popes will write letters to the church, you know, the bishops and the clergy and so on. But this particular one is written to everybody living on this planet, irrespective of your, you know, denomination or faith or other persuasion. So for me, that's really something that's very important to look forward to. And the tremendous potential that young people, especially in Africa, have is something that, you know, really fires me up and wants me to get up every day in the morning to find ways and opportunities to help them develop and realize that potential. And that's really what Sinessa exists for, to help just provide that channel and organization so that those young people can come through, develop their leadership, and make certain changes, you know, specific changes for their communities. One of the, you know, questions that usually comes up, you know, when talking about challenges with young people in running things is that a lot of us have great ideas, but you know, if you go as an individual, often you'll be told, but it's only you, you know, what do we do with you? But if you join together and you come, you know, with as a group, as an organization, if you're organized in a particular fashion, then, you know, you become a force to be reckoned with, and every door will open for you.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. This is our time. This is our time for Africa. And without a doubt, everybody who's been listening to this podcast, below the podcast, we've got all the contact details for each of the guests that were here and the organizations. So you're able to reach out directly to them, because one of the aims of what we're doing is we want to ensure that you're able to reach professional people, people who know what it means to take care of our environment and to help protect, sustain, and grow ourselves as Africans. Thank you. And have a great day.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to a podcast by the Network of African Women Environmentalists, NAWE. Join us every Friday for more moments of reflection about our changing landscape and how you can contribute to restoring our earth. For more information, check our website, nawe.group, and the show notes. Thank you, and see you next time.